So I'm finally doing my long-awaited update with the state of Indiana. So on, what's today? Today is May 2nd. So May 1st, yes, the days still jumble together. Yesterday, May 1st, Governor Holcomb presented his plan to reopen Indiana. He calls it Back on Track. So if you are a Hoosier listening, the website is backontrack.in.gov, and he has the entire plan listed. One thing that I really appreciated about Governor Holcomb is that he was very, very detailed in his plan, to the point where it was so overwhelming that I had to kind of break down information before I decided what to talk about. So I really do appreciate that about him. So one of the things, what's most important is that he has it in 5 stages. And stage 1 was from the day he did the executive order, which was, I think, March 23rd or 24th to May 4th. So the order expired yesterday at 11:59 p.m. And I guess basically the weekend is just fair game. And then stage 2 will start on Monday. So for stage 2, that goes from Monday, May 4th to May 23rd. Stage 3 is May 24th to June 13th. And stage 5 is June 14th to July 3rd. His whole goal is to get the state completely reopened by the 4th of July, so we can truly celebrate Independence Day. He didn't say those words, but he kind of like implied that, which I guess it was kind of funny, whatever. So one thing that he did sign another executive order as well as doing the outline, the plan. One thing that I noticed was he talked about how no one, like stores or anything, or I guess anybody, be restricted to purchase firearms and ammunition. If you know anything about the Midwest or Indiana in particular, we love our guns. And I also noticed that he still wants to have social distancing, but churches are exempt to that, which is interesting. He wants social distancing, gatherings no more than 25 people, but churches are exempt. Again, if you know anything about the Midwest, we love our guns and we love Jesus. We love church. We are Christian. And that's things that people were upset about. 2 things people were upset about. They were worried about the government taking away their guns and, you know, stopping them from buying ammunition, which I don't know what you need to shoot. If everybody's supposed to be inside, I don't know what you're supposed to shoot at. And the whole church situation, I mean, church isn't a building. Like, so if you feel like church is a building and you're being prohibited from going to church, you might want to rethink your, you know, understanding of Christianity. I'm not going to get into all of that. That's a whole nother episode. But basically my point is, if you are a Christian or know anything about the Bible, the church is not a place. It's not a building. It's the people. So it doesn't matter where you are the church. And a lot of churches are doing virtual, and he actually recommends they still do virtual, but he's not going to, I guess, arrest people for having church or something. My mom is one of the at-risk people. I think I talked about before how she's older and she has high blood pressure and she has a weakened immune system. And so her husband said, I don't care what the governor said, we're going to stay in for at least another month just to be safe. Because, you know, people are going to flock to the churches and flock to the stores and all other kind of places that are now open. So he has everything in stages, like I said. So I talked about the social distancing guidelines for this first stage or second stage. He wants no more than 25 people in a gathering, and he still wants 6 feet apart. Again, except churches, I don't understand how you're supposed to social distance in a church, especially if your church is, you know, you have a lot of people, like hundreds or thousands of people. If you don't have a big church, I can see how you can social distance, you know, hey, stay 6 feet away from me. But I mean, that, I feel like that's just a disaster waiting to happen. But I mean, there are some people who will return to the physical church building. But I know there are some churches I read on Facebook that they said, hey, you know, we're not ready to do this, so we're going to go ahead and just keep streaming. So churches are able to open up on May 8th. So that's what he's basically saying with churches. Churches are exempt from the gathering, the maximum gathering requirements. Probably because, again, people were upset. You know, they love their church, they love their guns. Okay, so the next one is, I probably should have said this first. So he said that we meet the four requirements to open up again based on the CDC, which is a whole other situation because the CDC guidelines quietly expired on April 30th on Thursday. And we haven't heard anything about that. As far as I know, I haven't seen or read or heard anything about it. I did read that President Trump is supposed to be giving a town hall tomorrow night. So I'm guessing he'll address everything in there. So, I mean, I don't know, but I know the fact that I think they said like about half the states are opening their economies to some extent, even the ones that shouldn't be, the ones that are still getting, you know, high numbers of cases. But so if a lot of the states are starting to open back up, it would make sense for the federal government to kind of ease restrictions as well. So, I mean, I'm excited to hear what the president has to say about that tomorrow because, you know, being quiet about it while a lot of states are opening back up doesn't really, you know, help because it's like, okay, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. Well, what's the federal government doing? What do they say about that? What do they recommend? So I'm guessing tomorrow night we'll have all of that. So again, we meet the requirements. I do have the website pulled up. I did try to take notes, but it's a lot, so I might just end up reading some of it. But the first requirement was the number of cases decreasing for 14 days. So he said that we meet that requirement. We have to have capacity for ICU beds and ventilators. So we still have ICU beds. We still have ventilators. I think I talked about the governor visiting the factory in Kokomo, and they were making ventilators. So that's, you know, something that people are still doing in Indiana, still have ventilators. And another thing that we meet apparently is we have the ability to test everybody that's symptomatic. So, I mean, I don't know how many tests you have to have. I mean, our state is about just under 7 million people. So I'm not really sure if they have 7 million tests. I don't know. They're saying that they have enough to test anyone who's symptomatic. I mean, I guess not all 7 million will be symptomatic, but I just think that's kind of a weird thing to say. So, I mean, they have to have at least millions or thousands of tests to be able to say that. And the thing is, people were talking about, hey, what if I'm asymptomatic and I want to get tested? So there wasn't really a response to that question per se. I guess they probably want to get the people who are symptomatic, but you never know. I mean, you could be asymptomatic and you could have it, you know, being asymptomatic and spread it to your family who ends up being symptomatic. So then they get tested, they find out they have it, you know, so I'm not really sure how that works. But he did say that we have the ability to do this. And one thing that he's really going to focus on is contact tracing. So if you test positive for coronavirus, this state is going to stalk you and harass you until they make contact with you telling you that you're positive. I don't know why they would have to do that. If you get tested for coronavirus, wouldn't you want to know if you have it? So I don't know why you would like dodge their calls. He said, but there'll be a text, email, a phone call. And he said they're hiring about 500 people to do this. So again, if you get tested for coronavirus, please don't ignore them if they're trying to give you your results back. That's just kind of weird. I don't know why people would do that, but I guess maybe he's just trying to, you know, make sure, you know, I don't know. Because it could be that sometimes maybe jobs will want people tested and the people won't care. I mean, I don't know. I don't have any logic behind that. I don't know. Sounds good, I guess. But one thing he also said about testing was the state added 50 additional sites in different parts of the state. And he said that these sites will be able to test over 100,000 people every month and help detecting these early cases, that's a good thing. Another thing he talked about was PPE. How the state will actually provide PPE to businesses and nonprofits with less than 150 people. And I think that's fantastic. There'll be $300 million spread across the state of Indiana, and a part of that to pay for part of that. And I think that's a good idea, because I know there are, again, the small business owners, they're kind of freaked out because, yeah, they need to open up, get back to work, but they're still worried about, you know, the health and safety of themselves, their employees, and not everybody can afford these things. So it's really good for the state to be able to help out these small businesses by saying, hey, you have 150 or less employees, here's some PPE for you, here's some masks, you know, whatever you need for your employees and yourself, here you go. I think that's a great idea, because there are people that are scared to come to work. And that was a question on yesterday, that was a question. One of the journalists asked that about, you know, hey, what about people who are scared to come to work? What about people who aren't ready to come to work? Of course, he gave a BS answer. The answer basically was like, I have no control over that. It's the company itself. Because the guy was asking, you know, people who are scared to return to work or feel uneasy about it because, you know, they have sick people at home or they don't want to, you know, possibly bring the virus home. What happens to them? Well, I mean, of course, it would be up to the company, but I can't imagine companies saying, you know, you don't feel like coming to work. Oh, that's cool. You keep your job and stay home and we'll have other people just come into work. So I really feel like I haven't heard anything just yet about companies saying this, especially like local companies. But if the company is open, you're required to come to work. If you don't want to come to work for whatever reason, I'm not saying I agree with this or not, but you're fired. Because the company's open, you should be coming back to work. You don't want to come to work for whatever reason it is, you're fired. Unless you have sick days that you can take, because if not, the companies can't afford to have, you know, 50 of their 100 employees staying home because they're scared to come to work or they're uneasy about it when they have a business to run. So if their business needs 100 people to run and 50 of them stay home, well, those 50 are probably going to get fired, and other 50 who want to actually work and they aren't worried about it will come work. So I think that's a big problem with the economy opening up, not just for like Indiana and local, but I think federal as well, because there are people who are terrified. Like I said, my mom and my stepdad, he's like, we're not doing this for at least another month. We're not going to church. You're not going to the store, you know, nothing. We'll continue to do everything virtual. Luckily, she's a teacher and schools are out. They've been out since March 13th. And the state of Indiana, at least, and the governor, when he signed one of his emergency orders, his executive orders, one of the ones in the beginning, he talked about that schools will be closed for the rest of the school year. So it doesn't matter the fact that the state's opening back up. And that's what somebody asked a journalist. And he said, no, what I said in the executive order about the schools, that still stands. So schools are still, they're still out, you know, for the rest of the year, which people keep saying the rest of the year. I mean, it's May 2nd. Most schools started getting out like May 25th or so. So, I mean, it's only a couple of weeks away. So it wouldn't make any sense to reopen schools. Not only that, but a lot of school corporations, probably all of them, have done some adjusting to their calendars or, you know, done e-learning. They figured out how to finish the rest of the school year, you know, virtually or, you know, just non-physically in a building. So the schools are still going to be closed. So that's the first part. All right, let me close this tab. Like I said, it's a lot of information and I'm really glad about it. Let's see, let's close this one. Okay, so stage two, like I said, will be May 4th, which is Monday. One thing he said was there are three counties that are not going to be opened on Monday, and that's Cass, Lake, and Marion counties. Lake County is up north by Gary, what is in Gary, that's Gary, Indiana, Maryville, and it's close to Chicago. So their influx of cases probably comes from the travel back and forth. So they're not going to be able to open. Cass County, I know it's north of me. I think Logansport is the county seat. I don't really know anything about Cass County. Marion County, that's the county that has Indianapolis. So that's the major county. It has about 800,000 people, not including those in the donut counties, like the suburban counties. So that makes sense for them not to open right away. counties that can't open up completely on May 4th. The next date is for Lake and Marion County, it's May 11th, and for Cass County, it's May 18th. I think I talked about before how the mayor of Indianapolis extended the stay-at-home order until May 15th, and people did ask about that. The journalists asked about that, and he said that he would respect, you know, local leadership. You know, he's not going to override them, and he said, you know, if the mayor or whoever the community leader is feels that they're not ready to do that, and, like, so, for instance, May 4th is when the state's going to start opening back up. Indianapolis is going to be down until May 15th. So he said, I'm not going to override his decision because I feel like he's doing what's best for his people. Now, that sounds good, you know, that sounds really good, but let's face it, like, realistically, if the state's opening May 4th, everybody's doing their thing May 4th, unless they're going to send out the IMPD, the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department, to go arrest everybody that disobeys the mayor's order. I mean, come on, guys. So, I mean, it's a good thing to think and to say, but to actually put into practice, I'm going to really be closely watching that because I live near Indianapolis. I'm not in the county, so I'm not affected by any of this, but I am going to try to pay close attention. My little sister works in Marion County. She has two jobs and she works in Marion County. So I'm going to kind of see, you know, get information from her, like, hey, what's going on? Because she actually works in childcare. So she's been considered an essential worker the entire time. She's been working, you know, nonstop. And so I'm going to ask her, you know, hey, what are people doing? What's going on with the daycare? You know, the programs you work for type of thing? Are people obeying, quote unquote, the mayor? So I'm interested to see how that works out because I don't think it will. So May 4th, if you live in Indiana, May 4th, you can start doing stuff. So, of course, he talked about the people that are 65 and over. Because apparently for Indiana, I think it said on here, like 80-something percent of people who have died from the coronavirus have been over the age of 65. So apparently it's killing older people, which are, you know, for many reasons, you know, being higher risk because they're older, they might have health problems, their immune system is weakened. So it's really, I mean, I think the coronavirus is affecting everyone, but the people, at least in Indiana, who seem to be dying from it are the older people, probably with weaker immune systems, you know, pre-existing conditions and whatnot. So he still wants those people to kind of be, you know, more like conscious of what's going on. He's not saying, you know, if you're 70 years old, you can't go out and go do whatever. I just prefer you not to, type of thing. I'd really like to think that the family members of those who were older and high risk wouldn't say, hey, grandma, you know, my 78-year-old grandma, hey, come on, let's go to the store, let's go shopping. Like, I like to think that people wouldn't do that. They wouldn't, you know, take their elderly parent or relative out and about and, you know, put them at higher risk than they already are. But I mean, there are some people, you know, but it could be that the older person might say, hey, you're not gonna stop me, I want to do it. So there's always that. So he said that he does recommend that people wear face coverings in public settings, which again would make sense. It's not required. You're not going to get, again, you're not going to get pulled over or arrested for not wearing a mask in public. He just recommends it. Let's see, he talked about the 25 person gathering. And so I told you that churches were exempt. Well, I shouldn't say churches. I should say, like he says on here, places of worship, because not everybody's a Christian. You know, we have mosques, we have synagogues and other religious institutions that I don't know, even though Indiana, which really, really Christian, especially the whole Midwest, but he does acknowledge that it's not just Christians and churches. He, you know, actually does the whole blanket religious thing. So I apologize if anybody's listening and they're not Christian. I'm not trying to offend you. I apologize. I go by Christian and church because it's the most popular in the United States. But it's not just Christians, not just churches, it's everybody. Okay, back to that. So the 25 person gathering, he says it applies to wedding receptions, birthday parties, Mother's Day gathering, since that's coming up, and anything where people are in close physical contact for extended periods of time. Now, I just think that's very interesting that you don't want 26 people gathering at a wedding reception, but it's okay to have 250 church members in a building. I mean, I think part of the reason, a big chunk of the reason why he did that is because He has been criticized. A lot of these governors, Republican, Democrat, or otherwise, they have been criticized hardly, like harsh criticism, just like ridiculous for affecting churches. And so I really think that part of him exempting them from this social distancing and this gathering is to get people off his back. But I kind of think it's unfair. I mean, yeah, I get people want to go to church and this kind of stuff, and they feel like the government's taking their church away or taking their God away or whatever. But I feel like, you know, if 250 people can go to church, but 26 people can't be at a wedding reception, who are the ones more at risk? Is it the 200 people in a church or the 26 people at a wedding reception who can actually practice social distancing, you know, especially if it's outside or, you know, in a large building or something? But I do understand, you know, where he's coming from. But I just think that's, you know, and that's why, like, my mom and other churches I've seen on Facebook, they're like, you know, we're not ready to do this. We're not ready to put our church members' lives at risks. You know, we're not ready to do this. We understand the governor says we can, but we're just not comfortable doing it. Just like businesses, you know, the governor says you can open, but if you are a small business owner, you have your own business, you're in charge of your own company, you know, they can't force you to open back up, which makes sense. Not everybody is ready to jump back into things. People are still scared. People are still dying, you know. Is it getting better? I mean, you see the death toll numbers rising, you know, nationwide and worldwide. So, I mean, I really can't answer that question if it's getting better, because just because, say, 25 states are presenting these plans to open up their economies, doesn't mean that it's getting better. And I think that's kind of the illusion that some people have. Oh, all these states are opening back up, so it must mean it's gone. Coronavirus is over. I told you this is a Democratic hoax. It wasn't real. It's fake news. That doesn't mean that. So I kind of feel like the states that are opening their economies, this might be very cynical of me, but it is what it is. The people that are going out and doing what they're allowed to do based on these new guidelines, I kind of feel like they're the guinea pigs, because our governor said, you know, this is the plan that I have, but if it doesn't work or something happens and we need to, you know, back it up and start over again or, you know, revise this plan, we will. So I feel like the people might be guinea pigs because, okay, you're saying people can do these things. Okay, let's see when they do it if something happens to them. And if something does, it's like, oh crap, we got to bring it back, we weren't ready, come on back. So I mean, that might be, you know, harsh to say, but that's kind of how I feel about it. Not just Indiana, all the states, because not everybody in the state is going to flock to the shopping mall or whatever it is. They're, you know, going to want to be cautious and stay at home, you know, still order stuff off the internet, do curbside pickup. They're not ready to do it. So it's going to be interesting to see with these states that are opening back up, how is this going to affect everybody? Well, at least the ones that are participating in the reopening. I mean, I'd like to think that nothing happens to them, but it would really suck if, like, people doing this ended up dying and then they close it back up or whatever. I mean, that would just really suck. I hope that doesn't happen, and I really hope more people don't get sick. But I mean, face it, if you're opening up the economy and allowing people to slowly get back to business as usual, cases are going to increase because he says that he still wants social distancing. I don't understand how it's possible to social distance at church or at work in an office setting, or, you know, a store, a mall, like, how, you know, people are everywhere. So, I mean, I really hope that's not the case, but I mean, we'll find out. We'll see. I'm not going to be participating in this at all. Again, you guys know I don't have a job, so none of this has really affected me anyway, but I'm not ready to try to, you know, go out and do something. And I mean, I don't do anything anyway. I'm a homebody. I order all my stuff off the internet anyway. You know, my mom told me earlier, she's like, you need to go get fresh air. And I said, well, I have a package from Amazon at the Amazon hub. I'll get in my car and drive over there and go get it. So I did. And my car started, by the way. I know I talked about how my car didn't start. My stepdad said, tell her if her car doesn't start, I'm coming to get the whole car. So luckily it started, because it's actually hot today. It's the high today is like 83. And the high yesterday was like 60, then it was 40, you know, hashtag Midwest, you know, Indiana. Our weather is crazy. So, okay, so that was the, I was talking about stage two is what I was talking about. So again, churches can open up, have services again on May 8th. He talks about the restriction of people and still wanting to do the social distancing. He talks about how we're going to have BMVs that are open, but they're going to be by appointment only. Again, you don't want everybody rushing back into whatever it is, because a lot of people's licenses have expired, whether it be driving licenses, professional licenses, license plates, they've expired. But he did say in one of his early executive orders that anything that's expired, he's giving you a pass until, I think it was May 31st. So if your license expired, you know, April 7th, you know, and you're driving back and forth to work, you know, you're an essential employee, you know, you get pulled over, you're not going to get a ticket for your license expiring April 7th, because that was after the stay-at-home order took place. Now, if you get pulled over and your license expired February 7th, then you're going to get a ticket because, you know, we weren't even at that point February 7th. So I hope people don't flock to the branches, but I mean, they probably will. And you guys know the BMV, like the running joke is that, you know, there's long lines, people are rude, it takes forever, you're there for hours, that type of thing. So I think doing it by appointment only would be great, because they could set aside times and blocks for people to come in and you know, you just do like one or two people at a time and, you know, just get it done. I mean, where I live, again, outside of Indianapolis, so I kind of live in the suburban rural area, depending on where I am in the county. And one of the branches that I go to, the only branch that I go to, I have never had to wait in line. No, I take that back. Maybe like 2 minutes. But whenever I go there, it's not packed. I've never had to wait in line. And it's crazy, partially because, I mean, it's not new anymore. It's been around for, it's 2020, at least 5 years or so. But the branch is, it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere. It's surrounded by fields, actually. I haven't been there in a while, so I'm not really sure what it looks like now. But basically, it's not a popular location. So the people that go there are those who live in the county, live in the area, or know people who live there and said, hey, come get your license renewed here because there's no wait time or whatever. So I haven't had to experience this, you know, ridiculous wait time. Now, when I did live in Marion County, when I was younger, I'm trying to think how long I waited to get my license. I want to say it's like 2 hours. I was doing it in between breaks. I was in college in between breaks with classes. And I was actually late getting to my next class. And my professor was like, you know, what's going on? Why were you late? And I was like, I was at the BMV. And he was like, how long were you there? I was like, about 2 hours. He's like, oh, okay, come on, sit down, you know. So I don't have to deal with that anymore, which is great. Okay, so another thing he talked about in this stage two is... I talked about the policies that the county and local governments will do. He won't override them. One thing that really got me confused about all of this stuff that he was talking about, he was throwing numbers and percentages. Like he said, right now, so retail businesses, as of May 4th, Monday, they can operate at 50% capacity. Shopping malls can open at 50% capacity. Their indoor common areas at 25% capacity. What does that mean? Like, how do you do that? I don't understand how that's going to happen. I mean, I know some buildings, they'll have like capacity, you know, 1500 people. So cut that in half or cut, you know, but how are you going to go around? Like, how is that going to happen? Like if you were in a shopping mall and it says 50% capacity, well, how many people can the mall hold? Like, I don't understand how that's going to work. This whole capacity thing. Not only that, but who's going to be going around and checking, you know, hey, this store, hey, this is Macy's. Okay, it says they can have 1,000 people in this store. Do you guys have 500 people? Do you? Let me count everybody. Like, how's that going to work? I'm not really sure how. I mean, it sounds really good, but realistically, I don't understand how anybody's going to do numbers like that. Not only that, but people aren't going to care. If you're a business that's being able to open back up, you're not going to care about capacity. You're going to care about making money, making profit. And if you are a consumer, a customer, you're going to care about being able to buy stuff. Now, there are going to be people who do care and want to take the precautions and social distancing guidelines seriously. But again, I mean, and the thing is, people have been cooped up in their houses since, if you've been a teacher or even a student, you know, March 13th. So it's like people are going to want to get out just to get out. And the fact that places will be open, it's like, hey, let's just go here just because we can. Probably younger people might want to do that. I would hope the elderly and older adults would be more cautious with this, because again, the death rate seems to be the highest among older people. So if you're like 10 as opposed to, you know, 70, you know, I mean, I don't know, but it could be that people just want to go out, walk around. You know, again, I haven't worked since December, so I've been social distancing and staying at home since December, and it's now May. None of this affects me. The only thing that it really affected me is I started going to a writing group. I think I talked about it on here before. It was at Starbucks. We would meet once a week for an hour, and we would just write. We wouldn't really even talk to each other. It was a matter of us being able to be together, kind of discuss a little bit about what we're doing. But for me, it forced me to work. So I got up, we met at 9 o'clock. So I got up at, you know, 8:30. The Starbucks was not that far away from me. And I would get there and I would be there till, you know, from 9 to like 11:30 or whatever. And it would force me to do work. I was in my first class with my PhD program. And so it was really a good thing that it happened. And it did kind of suck when everything shut down, because I was like, this group, what's motivating me? Like, okay, every Tuesday at 9 o'clock, I know I have to go there. You know, I need to get my notes together, you know, read this stuff so I'm able to type up what I need to type out and type my paper. So obviously I still had to do that because the classes didn't stop, they're online. So that was one of the main things that affected me. And I would go to Walmart every now and then and grocery shop. I mean, I would grocery shop maybe like once a month, because I would buy a bunch of stuff to last for, you know, a month or whatever. So I looked at my bank account and I saw that I got the grocery pickup April 7th, I think it was. And I was like, oh, cool, it's not even May 7th and I still have water. I kind of felt like it's time to grocery shop when I run out of water, because the tap water in Indiana, no. So I buy bottled water, and the last pack I bought was 40 bottles, and I already had some left over. So I might run out of food before I run out of water, but that was totally random. But anyway, back to this. So when it comes to the capacity and the guidelines and stuff, I'm not sure how that's going to work and who's going to enforce it. That's what I'm kind of confused about. So he talked about what people care about: hair salons, nails, barbershops, spas. I don't know who's going to rush to get a tattoo after this. I mean, a spa, a massage would be ideal, but all these different types of places, they can open May 11th, and it's by appointment only. And he says that the employees should wear face coverings, try to social distance as much as possible, which is not really possible if you're giving somebody a tattoo or cutting their hair, but I don't know. And it said that customers should be able to wear their face coverings as well. And I'm like, I don't have a mask. I mean, I have like a scarf I could tie around my face, but because I desperately need my hair done, like many people of America out there need their hair and nails and all that kind of stuff done. I just need my hair done. I would like to get my eyebrows done, but I'm not sure how I feel about somebody being super close to me waxing my eyebrows, even if they have a mask on. I mean, I'm not really comfortable with that idea. So I'm just gonna have to keep having bushy eyebrows. Okay, so this is all stage two. What remains closed? Unlike the governor of Georgia, he's still keeping bars and gyms closed, and nightclubs. So that's still closed. You can't just run over to LA Fitness and all 1,000 people jump. Like, no, it's still closed. So he's, again, opening a little bit of stuff at a time. The entertainment industry stuff that we have is still going to be closed. Bowling alleys, zoos, and that type of stuff. Playgrounds are still closed. You know, so it's still, you know, casinos, swimming pools. So it's still I think it's good the way he's rolling it out. He's not doing everything at once, and the stuff that he's doing, he said that he talked to the different industries, the different companies, to decide who should open what first and how, based on the importance, I guess, of their industry, how comfortable they feel and how comfortable they think that customers would feel. Because if you want to open your business but you're not convinced that people are actually going to come to it, you might want to hold off on opening it because you're going to be up and running and nobody's going to come to it. So I think that's kind of how he was able to do that as well. And then also, you know, once it gets closer to summer, people are going to start caring about, you know, the zoo and the swimming pool and that kind of stuff. So he talked about how schools are still closed. The school year is still done physically. He has graphs on here and charts. I think it's fantastic. Like, this was really, really cool. I'm really excited that, you know, this happened. This is like the best thing that he's done. The entire coronavirus, all of it, this is the best thing that he's done, and I greatly appreciate it, you know. So he talks about stage 3, which would start May 24th to June 13th. May 24th is my little sister's birthday, and she was like, she asked my mom, she said, well, what is stage 3 about? Can we go to dinner? Can we have a party? And I'm like, I don't know about, well, having a party, so I don't know what we're gonna do. But so for the 24th, he ups it to 100 people at a gathering with social distancing. He still says that, you know, high risk people should still, you know, limit their exposure and that type of thing. There's no travel restrictions. My mom said that one of her friends or somebody she knew or whatever, a story on Facebook, that somebody got pulled over and they got a $150 ticket for, you know, non-essential travel. And I was like, what? How did they know? I mean, you know, you could just say I'm going to work or whatever, you know. And she said, well, the cop pulled the woman over and asked, you know, ma'am, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing driving around? And she said, the woman said, oh, I'm just driving around. And he was like, oh, okay, and came back with a $150 ticket. I'm like, what? Why would you say that? Why would you just say, I'm just driving around? You know that there is a travel restriction set in place. She could have said, I'm on my way from the grocery store. I'm going to pick up my medicine. She could have said anything, but that woman literally said, I'm driving around. Now, I mean, she didn't lie, which is, that's good. You know, she really was driving around. She said, you know, a couple times a week she would go out and just drive around because just being cooped up in the house. And I guess it didn't dawn on her that she's technically not supposed to be doing that. I mean, but my first thing would have been like, I'm heading to the grocery store, going to pick up my medicine, you know, going to pick up, you know, whatever. I would have totally lied, as bad as that is. I mean, you know, but so we're not going to have that anymore. I have any travel restrictions. I didn't really know that they were actually doing it. My mom didn't tell me like what county or what city the woman was from, but the fact that it actually happened, I mean, I knew, I heard about it, but I didn't know if it was actually being enforced and people were actually doing it, but I guess they were. I'm not really sure. So stage 3, what's still closed again, it's bars and nightclubs, sports venues. Oh, so for stage 3, he says that movie theaters can open at 50% capacity with social distancing guidelines. Again, that's kind of weird, but okay. So other, you know, playgrounds can open up, tennis courts, the gyms can open up, you know, restrictions, social distancing guidelines, you know, class sizes, if you're at a spin class or yoga class or whatever, having a smaller number of people. Retails and malls can go to 75% capacity. Again, I don't know what this capacity, what this percentage, what this is. I don't know. I'm interested to see how this kind of plays out in regards to the percentages and the numbers. So that's kind of stage 3. So stage 4 is from June 14th to July. Wait, hold on. I'm reading this wrong. To July 3rd. Oh, did I say the wrong stages? Oh, I think I did. Oh, it's because there's 5 stages, but we were already in stage 1. So this document, oh, now I've been saying the wrong numbers. Well, I mean, if you're on the website, if you go to the website, you can see for yourself. But I've been saying the wrong numbers. He's not counting. He's counting stage one as stage one. And I was, he's moving on. I was using it as stage one. And the last one would be stage five. But okay, whatever. So stage four is the last one. It's June 14th to July 3rd. This is the one that has the most amount of, you know, freedom, quote unquote, before everything's supposed to be over. So he still wants people to work remotely if possible from now all the way up until July 3rd, especially if you're older or at risk, a high risk individual. Social gatherings of 250 people can take place. Let's see, state government buildings, restrictions will be limited. If you work in a professional office building, you can resume work at full capacity. Malls and stores, full capacity. Bars and restaurants, 50% capacity. Again, I don't know. Cultural, entertainment, tourism stuff open up at 50% capacity. So zoos, museums, bowling alleys, aquariums, and stuff like that. You can restart your sports leagues. And he said that the CDC will provide guidance about like day camps and overnight camps for kids, like summer camps for kids. So let's see. I think that's pretty much it with that one, like that's what's changed. Let's see. Oh no, I was wrong. Oh my gosh. I did read this. I promise you, I read it. But I was wrong again. So apparently stage five is on here, not counting a stage. Okay, totally ignore what I said about the stages before. I was right the first time. Stage five is July 4th and beyond. I was looking at it as stage five was the last one, but he counts stage five as this is the day that all this ends and what happens from here on out, which I thought was kind of interesting to have that, because basically it's everybody's going to be open again. Everything's going to be open 100% capacity. Everything's back to normal. And he still feels like people at high risk should adhere to social distancing guidelines, or just kind of be more aware of what's going on in their health. And this is July 4th. So social gatherings of over 250 people can take place. Now this is 4th of July, so I'm pretty sure when people are celebrating Independence Day, it's going to be more than just American independence. It's going to be independence from the federal government and the state government restrictions and oppression and tyranny and all kinds of stuff. I don't know how fireworks are going to work. I know that where I'm at, probably most cities, most states have where they have a designated like area that does it. Like if it's a downtown area, for us where I live, it's a local park, and they do fireworks every year. And recent years, I don't know if it's like budget cuts or what, but I've been going to this same park for probably just over 10 years, I want to say, 2010? Yeah, probably over 10 years. And within recent years, I've noticed that the amount of fireworks and the time has gone down. When we first started going to this park, I want to say it was at least like 30 to 45 minutes straight of fireworks, just all kinds of just cool stuff in the sky, all this kind of stuff. The last year that I went, I think it was less than 15 minutes. And I was like, are you kidding? And I'm just looking like, that's it? So I don't know if it's budget cuts or what's going on. I mean, but it was just kind of something, you got together with your family, just sat there, you know, you had a barbecue earlier in the day, and then you come and you sit down and, you know, get your little lawn chairs and watch fireworks for half an hour or so. And, you know, and then it's like, okay, if it's 10, 15 minutes, you know, it took us 10 to 15 minutes to get here. So I'm not really sure. But this year, I'm not sure what they're going to do, what the state, local, like county, towns, what they're going to do with fireworks. I think that fireworks shouldn't be a problem, especially with social distancing, because you're not around people anyway when you're setting them off. But I think it might have to do with funding and budget, like for real this time, that it has to do with funding and budget cuts, because we haven't had any, you know, some people haven't had income coming in, or they're waiting on their stimulus checks, or they're waiting on their PPP from the government or the SBA for the government. So I'm not really sure how fireworks would work in that sense, because it really could be budget cuts this time around. Or what it could be would be that the companies and the people that set them off will spend more money and they'll do it longer to, you know, exacerbate the feeling that we have of independence. Okay, I'm done. Anyway, so after July 4th, basically everything will be about as normal. Oh, one of the things that he did talk about, people asked him this in the briefing yesterday, is he talked about schools and what would happen with schools. People are wanting to know about schools, obviously. We don't know if we are going to be social distance, you know, for the first few months, or, and I guess it does kind of make sense to write it out for the decision, because you don't want to make a decision now, like May, and say, oh yeah, schools are going to be closed, and then say by June, so like say by next month, like the virus is totally gone, everybody's fine, it's back to normal, which is not going to happen. So you want to kind of wait as late as possible to make decisions. The thing is, July 4th or July 5th is kind of late, because where I live, the area where I live in Indiana, we are on what is called a balanced calendar. So the schools that I've worked at, the schools my mom's worked at, the school districts, school corporations, it's a balanced calendar. So after every 9 weeks is a 2 week break. No, this is not year round. People want to call it year round. You're not in school the whole year. It's a balanced calendar, 9 weeks, 2 weeks, 9 weeks, you know, and then the end of the school year. So to have this calendar, schools have started really, really early. So schools start, I just checked for the next school year calendar for different areas, and it starts July 29th. So school has been starting for since July 29th, July 30th, like late July, probably for the last maybe 5 years or so, and the area around where I live and the surrounding counties and all that kind of stuff. So waiting until July 5th to acknowledge that might be cutting it kind of close, but then I guess not, because even if you don't meet physically at a school, you still have to be prepared for the school year. So I guess, you know, that's kind of, I don't know, something to look into, something to think about, especially for the principals and administrators of school districts, the superintendents of school corporations and stuff like that. And I know for bigger ones, it will have a whole lot more weight than it would smaller ones. So for instance, where I live, the town I live in, our school corporation is about 9,600, and that's K through 12. The one that I worked at was in Marion County. It was one of the largest in the state. And K through 12, it was over 30,000 kids. So yeah, that's a lot to try to figure out. So I think with smaller corporations, they'll have an easier time deciding what to do, because I know the governor will have input from the State Board of Education, the Superintendent of Public Instruction, he'll have those people making those decisions too. But also I would think that superintendents of school corporations would make their own decisions as well, maybe based off the guidance or advice of them, of the governor and his people. So I think that waiting that late isn't that bad. I mean, I don't know. But so yeah, so back to the calendar. So 2 week break. So I was looking, the calendars tend to change. The school where my mom works at, they get out, they go, I think it's July 29th, and they get out May 27th, I think. So I know in the beginning, a lot of people complained about the calendar. And they said, I don't want my kid going to school in July, you know, and they wouldn't, some parents wouldn't send their kids to school until like August 1st or something. But the thing with that is, you don't want them to go to school in July, but I bet you're enjoying that 2 week spring break. You could spend 2 weeks at Disney World instead of one, or the 2 week fall break, you know? And so people did start to be like, okay, yeah, we have to go to school in July, but we get to do stuff for 2 weeks in the fall and in the spring. Of course, you know, Christmas time, those 2 weeks. So it's kind of like a sacrifice. Are you willing to give up, you know, a couple extra weeks of summer to have breaks throughout the school year? Or do you want to have those 3 extra weeks of summer and not have all those breaks? Because if they were, basically what's happening is the schools are starting so early because they're adding 3 weeks. Most schools are adding 3 extra weeks into the calendar as breaks. So instead of school starting July 29th, it would start, what, like the middle slash end of August? But then you wouldn't have, instead of fall break being 2 weeks, you'd have a day. That type of thing. So that's why school starts so early. We're not in school the entire time. We have those 2 week breaks in between, which I think was fantastic, especially being a teacher. I was kind of iffy about the calendar too, but once it started, I was like, these breaks are perfect, because it's like right when you guys get to the point where students and teachers alike want to strangle each other, there's a break. It's like, oh yes, let's go home, regroup, got 2 weeks, come back. The only issue, the hard part, was going from spring break to the end of the year, or I guess like January to March or April. I mean, it was months in between there. It's when you get January is what, MLK, and then you have nothing until President's Day, and then you have it's not really that bad because you have 2 weeks of spring break. But I know it was a stretch. But during the fall semester, I really, really liked it. I liked it all the times. I loved it. And so now people are kind of rethinking it. And some school corporations have actually rolled back on that calendar, and they've gone back to a more traditional calendar, which means that they take away some of those breaks or rearrange them where they're able to go to school later. So I know one district, they go to school, I think it's the first week in August that they go to school, and they get out May 22nd. For this school year, I'm not really sure what they're doing, because some schools are already done or almost done because the governor let them have 20 days exempt. So I think it's like August 3rd to May 22nd or something like that. And I thought, wow, how do they pull that off? So I looked at the calendar and I saw that they took away one of the breaks 1 week. Oh, what they did was they took away 1 week of a break. So they took away, I think it was spring break, if I remember correctly. Because I just looked at this a little bit ago just to kind of see what was going on. That instead of having two weeks for a fall break, they had 1 week for a fall break, 1 week for a Thanksgiving break. Most schools get out Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, but they just added Monday and Tuesday as well. And they took away a week of spring break. And they also, which most schools should do this, I hope they start doing it, the professional development days, they took them away to where they're not teacher service days, no school, because obviously that counts towards the 180 days that students have to go to school here in Indiana. So they took away the professional development, like taking, because that would add days to the calendar. So like the school district I worked at, they're like, why do we get out so much later than everybody else? Because last year we got out June 14th. I have never been in school that long ever. My entire life as a student, you know, kid, teacher, I was so antsy. It was ridiculous. I'm like, why are we so late? And so I pulled up the calendar and kind of went over with my students. And I said, you see all these days? And I counted up 6 days. I said, this is 6 days you have out of school for foolish reasons. Professional development, parent in touch night, conference, like all this random stuff. I said, so schools that get out before us and start after us, this is why, because we have over a week. That's 6 days of random days that we have off in the calendar. And so I rolled it back and I said, if we didn't have those days, we would get out around the time those people did, or if we, you know, cut some days, basically we could finagle our calendar and get out at the same time. And they're like, well, that's not fair, I want to transfer. So I bet you do. So this year, the school corporation I work for, they get out June 3rd, I think it is. And that's because they actually took away one of the fall break weeks. So they took away those extra days, but they also still have those teacher days, the no school days. So if they would have taken those out, and they could have got out of school the same time as the other district that gets out May 22nd. So there's also that when it comes to school. So some parents were okay with it, some parents weren't. Some kids were okay with it, some aren't. But now people are kind of just scratching our heads like, is this really worth it, you know? You know, to have these breaks in between the school year? Should kids have a longer summer? Because the whole point in it was to help students retain information. Because if you have a super long summer, because the summer breaks, what these calendars are, 7 to 8 weeks. So if we didn't have this calendar, they would be like 11 weeks, I guess, 11 to 12 weeks. So like literally almost 3 months. And so it's like from, you know, May to August or June to August or whatever, that's a long time in between. And so the school corporations felt like if we put these breaks in there, and when it comes to summer, students are gone for an extended amount of time. So when they come back to school, it's not like reteaching them everything. But as teachers will tell you, and people probably found out, you're reteaching the stuff to them anyway. So, and even after the 2 week break, you know, it's like, hey, do you guys remember what you're talking about? No, really? It was 2 weeks ago. So it's like the student, like these kids say, these Gen Z kids today, like their retention and their attention, like it's just crazy. So it's like, at this point, going back to the regular calendar probably wouldn't really affect anybody because they still have to be retaught everything even after a 7 or 8 week summer break as opposed to a 12 week summer break. So, I mean, I'm not really sure, but I know for a fact that some schools in my county and Marion County, surrounding counties, that they have gone back to the traditional calendar and they say that it's worked out for them. So, and some say that the same thing I just said, that they didn't see a difference in the students and the retention and the knowledge. They didn't, it was the same, no difference at all. So the one that my mom works at, I know she said they were kind of exploring the idea of maybe taking some breaks out or trying to, you know, emulate the calendar. Because the calendar of the one school district I'm talking about, they're the only ones. So my mom works in Marion County. Let me give some background. Okay, so for Marion County, it's where Indianapolis is. It's the largest county in the state. So there are 11 school districts in Marion County. My mom works for one of them. I worked for two of them at one point. So one of the districts is the only one in Marion County that actually has this calendar I'm telling you about, to where they get out May 22nd. Last year they got out May 21st. I was like, no way. I didn't believe people tell me that. So I pulled it up, looked at it myself, and I was like, wow. And I found out a couple of years ago, they actually stopped doing that calendar. They stopped doing the balanced calendar and they went back to traditional. And so I think other schools, the other 10 districts, I'm not sure if anybody's actually done that as well, but I know they might be exploring the idea because they're kind of seeing how it goes with that district, because it's a fairly large district. And so I think that the other 10 might be kind of like, hey, let's see, what are you guys doing, you know? So I don't know. We'll see with that, when it comes to that, and how that would affect students, you know, because having a 12-week summer is great, but not having a break, you know, breaks throughout the year. When I was in school, we had a day for fall break. It was either Friday or Monday. Now you have 2 weeks for it. So it would go back to being just one day or 2 days or whatever. And then with spring break, go back to being, you know, 1 week. Sometimes parents are able to get off work, or if your parent is a teacher and they can take the whole 2 weeks and do something with you, you know, with your kids, your family. So it's kind of like, I don't know. I think they might be, they were the ones that were experimenting with it, but it seems to have worked out. The stuff I read on Facebook, stuff online, go to their school website, their district website, that it seems to be working well for them to be able to implement that new calendar. Because I know when we first moved out to where we live now, it was before the school district started doing the balanced calendar. And again, for the state of Indiana, everybody's required to go to school for 180 days, K through 12. So people would have it to where, at least in the district that I was in, or the one I live in back then, back in the day when I first moved here, they had where they would have their calendar set up to where they would start school in August and they would get out before Memorial Day, no matter what. That's how their calendar would be. I wasn't teaching there, so I didn't really see how they did the calendar or whatever, but I just know because my sister went to the schools that they would go to school in August with like August 1st or whatever, and they would get out before Memorial Day, whenever it was. And that was their thing, you know, because that's kind of like the kickoff, the summer kickoff for for at least for like Indiana and other places, and I guess in the Midwest, I don't really know. I know about Indiana and Illinois because that's where my parents are from, but about the summer kickoff being Memorial Day weekend. Like, that's the summer. And for Indiana, we have the Indy 500, and that race is on that Sunday. So it's like Friday's the end of school, you know, and then you have Saturday, Sunday's the race, and then Memorial Day's the next day. You know, that's kind of just been our traditional summer kickoff type of thing. So with this new calendar, most of the schools, other than the one I just mentioned, they still get out. They get out after Memorial Day, which kind of sucks because some schools, I was looking at their calendars, and they go to school on, like, Memorial Day is the last Monday in May, and they go to school on Tuesday, and then that's it. Or Tuesday and Wednesday, and that's it. I'm like, oh, you come back to school for one day? So I think that's very interesting to have it set up that way. I don't think there are any schools that actually go until Friday. So it's usually Memorial Day off, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Friday might be the teacher grading day or whatever. But I know that some school districts around here, they're funny. To encourage students to come to school after Memorial Day, they will have their finals after. So you have Memorial Day off, right? So say they come to school Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. They will have finals. Finals week will be those days. So if you don't come to school after Memorial Day, like, a lot of times finals are worth 10-20% of your grade. Unless you have straight A's, like 100%, you know, you can afford to fail all those finals, drop you down to like an 80. You know, you have straight B's, you know, they have it set up like that to encourage people to come to school. So it will be interesting to see over the recent, you know, during the years ahead, if schools will embrace that, if they will embrace and go back to the traditional calendar. I don't know if kids, I mean, I guess I'm trying to think the kids who would actually remember that. I really wish I remember when it was. I want to say the school district that I worked at the time, I think it was 2013 or 2014. Like, that school year that they did the balanced calendar. So some people might remember, you know, when it wasn't the balanced calendar. But most of them, you know, won't. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, how that works. Because if you have districts experimenting with changing the calendars back to what they used to be, and they work out well, you know, parents like it or whatever, if it's more convenient for parents, then I wonder if others will follow suit. Because usually in Marion County, there's, again, 11 school districts, and usually all 11 will do the same thing. There are two that are towns, unincorporated, so they don't really count per se. But the other 10 are district school, township schools. So it'll be interesting to see what will happen, because Indianapolis is the biggest city in Indiana. It's the capital. That the donut counties, the counties surrounding Marion County, sometimes what they'll do is look at what the Indianapolis schools are doing and apply that to their schools as well. Especially if you have people moving from one county to the other, it's like, oh, well, we still have the same calendar as them, you know, that kind of thing. Or even like private schools, you know, changing their calendars to match with the public school calendars, because some might have a younger sibling that goes to their private school and they go to a public high school. And so, you know, the older sibling's able to get out of school, drive and come get their younger sibling or whatever, because they have school the same day, or, you know, it's not an inconvenience because their older sibling or younger siblings in a different calendar completely. So we'll see how that goes. I know that with my mom, that she talked about how she does like the breaks, but it's kind of like, would it be better to have a longer summer? She kind of goes back and forth with it, but since she teaches sixth grade, she's like, nah, the two breaks in between, this is fantastic, these two breaks in between. So for some teachers, I think it depends on what grade you teach, like where you teach, how your kids are, if you would prefer a longer summer as opposed to the breaks sprinkled in between the school year. So, I don't know. But, so yeah, that was basically the governor's plan, which I think, again, I think it was a very well thought out plan. Now, I know he didn't do this by himself, obviously. I think it's a well thought out plan, and I think it's realistic. It's not like, again, Governor of Georgia just opening everything up. Oh, you guys go do this, this, this today. Everything is open. You know, like, I think that's a disaster waiting to happen. And again, I haven't really followed up on Georgia to see what's been going on. But for Indiana, at least, opening up in stages. Because like the governor said, you can see, like, we're going to be in stage 2 on Monday. So he can see if being in stage 2, what happens. Was it too soon? Do more cases come? Are there more deaths, like more hospitalizations? What's going on? And so he can stop stage 2, stop there, or go back to stage 1, or whatever. He's able to like handle it right then and there, because it's not everybody's back up 100%. So trying to close it back down would be like a horrible idea, and a disaster trying to actually put that in place. So I think that's a smart idea. Because if we're only opening like malls or stores, you know, 50% capacity, if bars are still closed, you know, that type of thing. So it's like, if we have to go backwards, it's not like the bars are like, oh, we got to close again. You know, we have to, what? We have to do this again. So it's like, because they weren't even open. So I think that's a really smart plan on his part, the way that he has it set up, to just see, you know, little by little, if this is good or not. Like, how, you know, and I know other states probably have it set up the same way. Their governors probably have it set up the same way. But I don't really follow a lot of states, obviously. I pretty much follow just Indiana and some of the other surrounding states, Midwestern states. Like, I was kind of looking at Ohio a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see how that works. Because, again, if he, then the thing is, I think the people that are freaking out, you know, open the government now, you know, give me my guns, constitutional right, foolishness, that the economy being opened back up little by little, I would hope to think that the people who've been screaming that their constitutional rights have been violated for, you know, 2 months, if he actually has to shut it down again, that they will see for themselves, you know, and be like, okay, maybe he was on to something. Probably won't happen, because I mean, they talked a lot about personal responsibility. Well, personal responsibility is kind of hard when the disease is asymptomatic. Now, like even the president, Dr. Birx, said, if you have the flu, you have symptoms, you know you are sick, you have a fever, you have a cough, you know you're sick, you know something's wrong with you, you use personal responsibility by staying home to not infect other people. Well, you can't use personal responsibility if this virus is asymptomatic. You have no symptoms and don't even know that you're transmitting it to other people. So it's like the whole personal responsibility, like, is not really valid in that sense, because, okay, I'm being personally responsible by being, you know, I'm wearing a mask or whatever, but I'm still infected. So I'm shaking people's hands or, you know, whatever the thing is, and you're still passing it on. Or even people that were asymptomatic and they pass it on to somebody who didn't believe the virus existed or didn't believe or whatever. So it's like the personal responsibility thing doesn't really go with this argument, because it's not in your face. It's not, okay, you have a flu, you have, you know, the runny nose, the cough, the fever, the chills, the aches, whatever. You've got coronavirus, you might not have any symptoms and you might be just unknowingly spreading it to everybody. So it's like, I don't know. I mean, if he does have to close it back down, I would just like to think that the people screaming personal responsibility, constitutional rights, would physically see with their own two eyes, okay, he lifted it up. And you see people using personal responsibility, because nobody's out here sick with symptoms. They don't have any symptoms. They're not out here in public with symptoms, but people are still getting sick. Huh, I wonder why that is. So, I mean, again, I hope that this doesn't have to happen, but the protests and all that kind of foolishness I saw on Facebook, it's like, really, guys, are you serious right now? And it was kind of funny, some of the protest pictures I saw, you know, they were holding up their signs, this is fake news, the Democrat hoax, and all these weird signs, like, you know, give me my rights back, give me my guns, don't take away my guns, just weird stuff, right? Totally downplaying or even ignoring the fact that the virus exists. I thought it was interesting that those people holding those signs had face coverings, and some of them actually wore gloves. So if you don't believe this virus is real, or the virus doesn't exist, or the virus isn't deadly, or the virus is nothing, why are you wearing a mask? Why are you wearing gloves? If you don't believe that, why are you wearing a mask? Why are you wearing gloves? I thought you didn't believe it was a thing. I thought you believed that it wasn't dangerous, that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't a big deal. So I think that's interesting. When I see pictures like that, I'm like, and one picture, there was a woman that she had on a mask, but her kid didn't. Her kid looked like he's maybe like 7 or 8. And I'm like, how are you gonna have, okay. And she had him holding up some stupid sign too. And I'm like, okay, guys, you go ahead and do that. I'm gonna stay in my house and enjoy the non-COVID air or whatever's going on out there, the germs, you know? So, but yeah, I think that's very interesting. So I have talked long enough, but if you notice, if you've been listening, what I did was I actually stopped a few times and I tried to make sure that the segments were 15 minutes or less. One of them, it was like 15:29 or 15:33 because I forgot, but I wanted to break them up into segments because I did say I wanted to keep them under 15 minutes because, you know, not everybody can sit there and listen for an hour and a half. You know, they have stuff to do, you know, but if you pay attention, the way I did it was I kept the same train of thought. I like remember what I said, like the last sentence, the last word, the last topic. So I don't really listen to myself talk because I hate the sound of my voice. I hate the lispiness of it. Just my voice is just so ugly. And if you're listening to it, I appreciate you because that must mean either you like my voice or you like the stuff I'm talking about enough to actually keep listening. But I do hate the sound of my voice, but I think I will go back and kind of listen to the breaks and see if it like flows well. So because I think I said in one podcast, I stopped recording on Anchor. I was using the app on my phone, the files app, what is it called? The voice memos app on my phone, because one time I recorded an episode on Anchor and I didn't realize you couldn't go past an hour. So when I got past an hour, it actually like deleted. I think it was like 59 minutes or whatever, and it was gone. I was so upset. And so after that, I haven't been using Anchor, so which is how I'm able to do like the super long podcasts, because I'm not using Anchor and their little time limit. Unless it was just something for me. I don't know. I've seen podcasts on here like 2-3 hours long. So I'm like, is that an Anchor thing? Or I just started using voice memo again. But in order to separate the segments, I thought it would be easier to use Anchor, because if they'd be like 15-minute increments, I can stop it. I could like stop it, upload that one, and go to the next one within like 30 seconds instead of trying to stop the voice memo and click on all that kind of extra stuff. So I'll listen to this and see how it turned out, but let me know what you guys think about, you know, what I've been talking about, you know, the governor, Indiana, the state economy, federal reopening, you know, that type of thing. And again, my Twitter is AK17033. That is my Twitter. Go ahead and follow me, DM me, or if you have a podcast that you would like me to follow or listen to, I will absolutely do that. You know, I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, you follow me and like me. Oh, cool. Thanks. Like, no, if you follow my podcast, or if you don't follow my podcast, if you just send me a DM and you're like, hey, you know, I'm so-and-so, listen to my podcast. I'm like, okay, cool. Whether or not you listen to mine doesn't matter. You know, I'll listen to it. I like listening to stuff. Especially the stuff that I'm interested in, so politics or, you know, government history, just random nonsense like a lot of my podcasts are a lot of the times. So I'm gonna go ahead and end this one. So I will talk to you next time.